Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream Podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited for our guest today, Pedro Guerrero, CEO of Guerrero Media. Welcome, Pedro. How's it going?
Hey, Mario. How are you doing?
Good, good. Glad we're finally connecting on the podcast. I'm familiar with your work. I know the people listening likely familiar with your publications, but would love to hear more about your background, one, and about Guerrero Media and all of the publications it encompasses.
Sure, man. And thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Pedro Guerrero. I'm originally from Hayward, California, as I like to tell people. I've been in Chicago now since 2002. I founded my company, Guerrero Media, 15 years ago. And we've spent the majority of that time, and still majority of our time right now, connecting with executives, getting to know them, interviewing them, and sharing their stories across a variety of magazines, a variety of platforms that we publish. Our most well-known brand is a magazine called Hispanic Executive. And I started that. That's actually my second magazine that I started. The first one was a magazine in the construction space called American Builders Quarterly. But we have five magazines. About 5-6 years ago, we started an executive network called the Alumni Society. And that was our first foray into a real live living network of people. The Alumni Society is a group of around 5,000 Latinos who went to some of the top schools in the country. Has been just a really interesting new evolution of everything that we do at Guerrero Media. What else do you want to know, man?
Congratulations. 15 years for any business is an accomplishment. Quinceañera, right? For a Latino-owned business, that's incredible. You've published some great profiles, everything from, Jessica Alba to Eliana and Alquimia Tequila. Yeah. But I guess I want to get a little bit of understanding, like, obviously, diversity and inclusion is having a moment. Founders from diverse backgrounds are having a moment, but you've been at this for 15 years. Like, what was the objective? Like, what was the mission for you, for Guerrero Media? And I guess I'm talking about Hispanic Executive just because that's the most well-known brand or magazine. So like, what's been your driving mission? Like, what made you found it? Why did you think it was important? And what drives you to continue publishing it?
Yeah, no, that's a whole episode, man. I mean, the driving mission has changed. I'm 42 years old, so 42 and a half, if I count my age the way my kids do. So, dude, when I started this company, I was 26 or 27, however, 42 minus 15, right? So when I started the business, the first impetus really was like, let's see if we can do this. And this was just jumping into something totally unknown, which is entrepreneurship. Right.
The first publication, was that the publication aimed at the construction industry? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No. And I'm getting somewhere with Hispanic Executive, but the first pub that we worked on was American Builders Quarterly. I was on the phone, I was talking to people, et cetera, in the construction space. And mainly it's because I had worked at a publishing company before I started my own organization. And that was the market that I was in, right? So I already kind of knew it. You know, one thing that I like to sort of share about myself and my life story, which I should have in the beginning, my apologies, is that I didn't seek out to become an entrepreneur. I didn't seek out to become a business person. I came to Chicago to become an artist. I went to a professional finishing school called the School of the Art Institute, and I got my master's degree in painting. So, you know, that was fun, but you can't pay the bills, unfortunately, at least not, you know, unless you're coming from a trust fund, which I wasn't coming from. So, you know, I eventually had to get a job. I had to get one that paid, and I had to figure it out. And so the first real quote corporate job was at this publishing company that I worked at. But, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about as I started to have discussions around this idea of starting your own business, I started it with a gentleman that I sat next to. He became my first partner. His mom became our first investor. And it was actually our third partner who really kind of helped us put this together was someone that I met in art school. And he had a background in design, creating magazines. I mean, he knew everything that we did. All we knew was sales and, you know, loosely an idea of how to maybe get this thing off the ground. Our third partner really had an understanding of how everything was going to come together. And so once we started to have these discussions, you know, I was thinking about, even before we got to the point of starting your own business, how cool would it be? And that's, I think, how I would talk to myself. How cool would it be if there was a magazine that focused on Latino professionals? You and I have talked about this before. There was already one out there in the marketplace at the time, and my dad subscribed to it. It was Hispanic Business. And, you know, they were a trailblazer. They were one of the first, if not the first, magazine out there just talking about Latino business that I'm aware of. But I remember a couple of things, and I don't want to be disparaging to Hispanic Business, but I remember one, my dad got it, and he was a teacher, and I don't think he ever read it, and he got it and he tossed it. And I remember looking at it and just thinking, you know, just the paper and the quality of this mag just doesn't, to me, it's not interesting, right? So I was coming to this idea of starting a magazine for Latino business professionals from this place where I literally had just trained, you know, where I just got my schooling, which was, you know, conversations around aesthetics, conversations around design, conversations around, you know, art and creative sensibilities. And so for me, my first thought really was, wouldn't it be cool if there was a magazine that talked about Latino professionals in a way that showcased their success in this, for lack of a better way to explain it, top shelf way, right? It's like, you know, what's interesting about that for me, at least now, you know, looking at the most recent, given, you know, I'm sure your audience would knows this, but I think it's like 30% of luxury consumer goods customers are Latinos, right? And so the Latino cohort is one that is growing in size. Certainly we hear that all the time, growing in wealth, not where we need to be, but it's growing. And also, you know, partial to the finer things in life, so to speak. And so, you know, for me, there was something that I thought was missing in the marketplace at the time. And I looked at it with that lens where, you know, our stories of success are those that merit the same level of care, the same level of quality, the same level of consideration, the same level of tact, the same level of sophistication that you see in some of these other publications, right? So that was sort of the first idea I had back when I was, you know, 26-year-old zero liabilities, no mortgage, you know what I mean? Just, no. Hey, let's start a company and let's see how that goes. That's what I was sort of thinking about with Hispanic Executive. But you know, that has grown, that has changed in so many different ways and for so many different reasons, let alone just growing up and maturing as an individual. But I still come back to that. And it's actually in many ways for me come full circle recently. And I'll share why. We just recently created a section in the magazine of Hispanic Executive that's going to focus on contemporary art. And, you know, to me, this is it harks back to a variety of things. It harks back to the thing that I thought about when I wanted to put something out there in the world that I wanted to see. You know, another obviously love of mine has been the arts. A love of mine has been contemporary art. Going to the Whitney Biennial, seeing the artwork there, and saying, wouldn't it be cool if at the Whitney Biennial, the artists were all Latino, right? And so, you know, having that brought back into the fold of this brand is very much still in line with some of the initial sort of seeds of creativity that I had, you know, been tossing around when I decided to start Hispanic Executive. You know, they're still there. Sorry, I'm going all over the place, but
no, this is
there's an answer to a question somewhere in there.
No, I think that's great. I mean, and I think what really shines through to me, your background as an artist and giving the same type of care from an aesthetic perspective and also from a storytelling perspective, right? Because, you know, you talk about the aesthetics of the magazine, and full disclosure, I worked at Hispanic Business, so so I get it. That's actually, it's kind of interesting how our stories are intertwined from that perspective. That's how I got into the world of Hispanic marketing and multicultural marketing. But you're right. There was definitely an opportunity there to take the aesthetic to a next level and take care in the storytelling, which really comes out in your retelling of why you founded it. And it's interesting. I mean, obviously you didn't know what was going to happen in terms of the increased focus of diversity and inclusion from a corporate perspective, but you did know what you did tap into is the importance of telling Latino stories, right? Which sounds like that's,
yeah, for sure.
Which sounds like that's the unifying theme for Guerrero Media, right? Whether it's with the Alumni Society, whether that's Hispanic Executive, it's telling the stories.
Yeah, 100%, man. 100%. I mean, you know, storytelling is, you know, a uniquely human thing. I mean, that's the way we connect with each other. That's the way we learn from each other. I mean, that's as old as time. So storytelling has always been a fabric of our company, quite literally. I mean, you know, write stories about people. But storytelling is like it's one of, you know, our beliefs at the company for the obvious reasons, but, you know, just as an entrepreneur, and you know, I've talked about this in the past and in a different conversation, you know, one of the best ways to learn in my experience has been through that concept of storytelling, of sharing experiences. That's been a huge part of my development as a business leader. And you know, more recently, I find it even more rich and exciting, speaking of, like, you know, full circle, that when I start to have the opportunity, I think one of the benefits of one of the reasons why I like getting out of bed is because my what we work on has afforded me selfishly the opportunity to listen to these Latinos that are incredibly successful, share their stories, share their experiences. I mean, it's just, it touches on so many levels of certainly human identity, but also, at least from my perspective, Latino identity and family identity. I mean, I remember just sitting, listening to the stories being told by my grandparents. It's just like, man, that, right? So there's at least in my family, and I would say from the Latinos that I know, Latino family, storytelling is a big component of that too. The family narrative, the family histories, the family mythologies. Right?
For sure. For sure. And you know, in talking about, you mentioned kind of your evolution as an individual too, right? I mean, you've 15 years, but it's touched on 3 decades of your life, right? And so I'm interested, I think similarly to, you know, our company Think Now, right? It's been, you know, we were founded 10 years ago, but a lot has changed. And, you know, talking about storytelling, I mean, what we do, obviously different, but we, you know, we're telling stories from a data perspective, but the events that happened in 2020, I don't know if you feel it, but for us has put an increased, I don't even know what word to use, but just more companies are interested in what we do. Let's put it that way. Because we're putting spotlight on, for us, consumers that are traditionally overlooked. For you, you're putting a spotlight on executives that are traditionally overlooked. And you have that cachet and history as a company. You're not somebody jumping on the bandwagon. And interestingly, I think, you know, diversity and inclusion initiatives have been around for a while. But now I feel like there's a dovetailing. Anyone that has anything to do with underserved communities are now being sought after for diversity and inclusion.
As they should.
Right? So talk about that. Why should they?
Well, look, I mean, storytelling is about, you know, authentic storytelling, right? Not I don't know if I can use colorful language on this, on your podcast.
Go for it.
Authentic storytelling, not bullshit.
Yeah.
Okay. Even though there's a place, there's a time and a place for that too. You know, storytelling is very much a way, like I said earlier, to get to know each other. Let me tell you a story about who I am. Right. And, you know, last year, 2020, you know, I think we were all, the entire planet, man, we're forced to reckon with a lot of things. This country specifically was forced to start reckoning with a lot of things. And companies are being forced from a lot of external and internal factors to start actually taking D&I seriously, whether it's policy, government, right? California, AB 979, I think that's the name of the bill that passed, that that stipulates that any company headquartered in California has to have at least one diverse corporate director, right? Or the NASDAQ last year that got approval from the SEC to make sure that any company listed on its exchange had the same. Or internal constituencies, whereas and staff, employees, they're demanding more out of their organization. So companies are forced to reckon with D&I seriously, right? So, so who do you want to work with to actually get some effective strategies done and implemented and in place at your organization? I would say companies Like Think Now, like my organization, that have the history of and the culture, internal culture, of taking that storytelling, that connectivity with certainly Latinos or other diverse executives seriously. You know, companies that have been there. And so that's why when I say as they should, it's like, you know, why should they work with companies that have already been doing this? I mean, because we've already been getting to know these various cohorts.
I mean, yeah, you tied it together perfectly because, to be honest, you know, I struggled as a founder in 2020 to, you know, we were getting inundated with diversity and inclusion requests. And actually, to be honest, prior to that, and I feel like I do have to mention, by the way, we are recording this on the 1 year anniversary of George Floyd's murder, which is, which, you know, has forced so much change and, I think in a positive way, but even prior to 2020 and even prior to what happened to George Floyd, you know, we were getting contacted by companies asking about diversity and inclusion. And I always felt uncomfortable because I felt like, oh no, we squarely do market research. But you're right. You know, I think one thing that I grappled with is I realized, well, yeah, we are talking to consumers on a daily basis. And different than Guerrero Media or Hispanic Executive, we're not talking to executives per se, but we are talking to consumers who may or may not be executives, but are likely, you know, working retail jobs, are people that were frontline workers. And so we know the challenges from a data perspective that they reach. And also we're talking to them in focus groups. So this idea of storytelling, authenticity, it is all intertwined with diversity and inclusion because you mentioned some of these initiatives in terms of stipulating board diversity companies. And I think that's a step in the right direction. I don't think that's a solve though. I think what's missing from that is this, what we're talking about is, okay, you have somebody on a board, but I know people on boards. I just had a conversation with somebody yesterday, in fact, a woman of color that was interviewing for a board position and was being interviewed by 10 older non-Hispanic white males. And that whole situation was uncomfortable for her, right? And they could have benefited from doing some just basic due diligence on the types of questions, what they're dealing with from a cultural perspective, not to mention the how it must feel to be such such an imbalance from a gender perspective, right? But I think, I don't know. I think that, I guess what I'm getting at is that what's missing is the soft aspect. Numbers are one thing. Numbers are one thing, but how people feel in these spaces, I think, is equally, if not more important.
Well, like, look, I think one of the things that's missing in this whole conversation is the reality of life and the reality of, you know, and this, I think, is missing across a lot of areas of society, and that's nuance, right? I mean, it's like, and so who best to know about the nuances of certain people, conversations, industries, right, than people that have lived and breathed it. And so, you know, I think the from my perspective, having separate, you know, this is, I don't know, hear me out here, you could tell me if I'm crazy. I think we're at a time now where a lot of what we've been doing now becomes central to the main value prop of the organization. So companies that are out there that still have a separate multicultural marketing department need to bring it into the fold and make it central to their marketing agenda, period. Right. But that also includes all other aspects that go into D&I, like procurement. Like, you know, so like if you want to talk about take executive search as an example. There's, you know, the main players in this space are, you know, they're the giants in the room. They've dominated this executive placement space for decades. That's where people go to naturally when they think, I need to get a C-level executive for my organization. That's going to be, you know, they go there. And I would argue that, you know, if we're really going to take, say, executive placement with a diversity lens seriously, it's time to perhaps consider other resources in the marketplace apart from the legacy institutions that most corporations still rely upon. And I think, and it goes back to, for me, this conversation around nuance and authenticity. You can, in 2020, start your D&I unit, but that's a little Johnny come lately for me. And that plays into, for me at least, that thread around authenticity. I would be able to tie it back in many ways to storytelling, authentic storytelling, which is, at the end of the day, for me, again, a human way to get to know another individual. And so, you know, who better than someone that's been in the market doing it for 5, 10, 15 years before it became fashionable?
No, you're right. And you're hitting on, I'm going to go back because you made a lot of good points there. This idea of moving out of the silos, thinking about, to your point, procurement, executive search, because we see the same thing on the research front, right? Like, so many panels I've been a part of, for example, liken it to executive search, okay? One of the big issues in our industry is like, oh, we can't find Hispanic respondents to take our surveys. We can't find,
right?
You know, we can't find Black respondents. We can't find Asian respondents. And it's the same issue for us, totally different, mm-hmm. totally different silos, but it's the same issue to us. They're going to the big players that always provide respondents instead of companies that have focused on this. And I'll tell you something, like, one thing I'm sure you've experienced this as well, tying it back to procurement. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of large companies, all of a sudden, their procurement departments reach out to us and want to present. Okay. And, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And we present, and we've been getting a flood of proposals, which I'm grateful. I'm happy. It's amazing. You know, we're going to have a record quarter. But I can't help to think about all the opportunities of the past decade of running this business.
And not just for you, man, for everybody.
For everybody, right? Exactly. I'm just looking at it from one company, one market research company, right? It's just mind-blowing. And the reason that this happens, to your point, is that it's siloed. And all of a sudden, right, the flood of proposals, by the way, is just from two companies. Granted, they're two of the biggest companies in the world, okay? But it's two companies. But that's life-changing money and opportunity for entrepreneurs and subsequently our employees, right? Like, I mean, I think, you know, moving out of those silos is so important. We got to put D&I front and center, because otherwise they're just going to be quotas.
Right. And they're very much still quotas now, man. You know, they're very much still quotas now. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead, please. I mean, so how do we shift that? How do companies, okay, we're, you know, tying it back to our listeners. Mm-hmm. I think companies have good intentions. I really don't think that they have good intentions. You know, that's the positive that came out of 2020. I think corporations do want to diversify because not only is it the right thing to do, but, and I say this all the time on the podcast, right? I mean, it also is good for the company. Diverse perspectives are good for companies. They're good for the bottom line. They grow companies regardless of what sector you're in. It's proven. The more diverse people you have looking at a problem, the more perspectives and the more likely you are to come to a better solution that ultimately serves the company. So how do we fix this? I mean, and I guess I'm gonna just tie it back to you and your company. How are you fixing it? What is Guerrero Media doing to promote, help companies in their diversity and inclusion journeys?
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot to say about how people should fix it, how we're fixing it. Well, oh man, where do I start? You know, I think, I'll go back to intentions. I agree with you. You can look at it cynically. You can look at it skeptically. You can look at it in so many different ways about, you know, why corporations are jumping to this. To me, I honestly don't care. I think it's great. Okay. So, all right, they're doing it to increase their market share, to sell, you know, Toyotas, like whatever. Good. That's my opinion. It's like, I don't care the reason. To me at this point, like, you know, we just need to get them going, keep at it. So I do think that the intentions are there. What companies need to do, in my opinion, and I've said this previously and other people have too, it's not like it's an original thought, it's you got to match that intention with a budget. Don't come at me with with a small budget, man. It's not worth my time. It's not worth Think Now's time. It's not worth any other entrepreneur's time or minority owned business. It's like, come at me with a real budget. Okay. So that's what I would say. So and often that is because of the silo, right? It's like, well, we've only carved out this much for, you know, black and brown businesses or whatever. Okay, cool. Well, you know, that's not my problem. So I think that's one big thing companies need to do. It's like, I'm glad you have the, I'm glad you're there. Congrats. Okay. Not cynically. Now match it with a budget. Okay. That you would apply to any sort of general market vendor. There's never an issue back to search working with these big retained firms, never an issue. Okay. The other, I think, a way to fix this is that if you're an individual in an organization that is talking with a founder that is Latino, founder that is, you know, African American, what have you, think about the questions you're going to ask. I mean, look, we're not looking for a handout for sure, but if it's the first time into a market or the first foray or a new product, and you know, part of doing this successfully is getting knocked down a zillion times, right? So part of the course for founders, you got to get ready for a million rejections. So that's the other side of this coin. But I guess where I'm trying to go here is that there are a lot of analogies, or analogous, I should say, scenarios that we're talking about. A question that I'm asked is, what is your experience in this space for something new that you are doing in the diversity space? I was like, well, I don't have that experience per se. And so what is your experience as an organization that's bigger, with bigger budgets and longer histories, being successful in whatever it is, the D&I thing that you're trying to get done, right? So I think what I'm trying to say is, I think if you're in an organization that has given the mandate to go find, from a procurement standpoint, an organization that's diverse, check yourself and the questions you're going to ask. They're not necessarily going to be the same ones you're going to be asking of other people. Right? Not because we're looking for a handout, but it's a similar situation, but because we're trying to make progress some here collectively. If you're coming to the table intentionally, right, with, you know, the good words, then check yourself so that we can collaborate together, corporation and vendor, to try to get after your efforts, right? Because an analogous situation here is on the corporate level. One of the stories that I hear often is when, you know, corporations are trying to find a diverse executive for their corporate position. But one of the stipulations that they have to have CEO experience of a major organization, you know, it's like, okay, well, there aren't that many CEOs out there. So it's not about lowering your standards, but understanding that if you're really trying to take this effort seriously, you're going to have to be creative in your thinking about how you're going to try to get to what you're trying to get to, if the intention is authentic. So what are we doing to try to fix the problem or what have you? I think this is the situation that I feel like both Think Now and my organization are in, where it's like we've been at it and now people are knocking on our door. So what are we doing? It's like we're going to continue to keep at it. That's what we're doing. One of the benefits of the media that we produce is that, you know, we actually work with executives who don't have the fortune or the opportunity to work with, you know, their organization's PR and comms teams, or they're not, we don't work with the CEOs per se. We work with, and we tell the stories of the CFO, the CHRO, often the executives that are busy working and driving strategy. And what's interesting about that, when you talk about what we're talking about, is that along the way, we've actually told the story of a lot of certainly Latino executives or Hispanic executives, but African-American executives, women leaders, LGBT executives, et cetera. And so I'm looking at the wake of the stories that we've put out in the marketplace, and I'm seeing a kaleidoscope of narratives that we've put out into the world that I think, for what we're doing on the content side, is to double down on that. Right? Because I think, you know, whether it's media, whether it's, you know, searching for someone to bring onto your leadership team or reading about someone that is successful, they may look like you. It's some of the same activity. Right? So for us on the media side, is doubly, you know, so we're just doubly down our efforts on really thinking through with intentionality and nuance and tact about the profiles that we decide to publish, the profiles that we decide to highlight, I should say, whether, you know, in a summary, in a newsletter, on our website, on the covers of our magazines. I think it's important for us to stop and say, look, this is an opportunity for us to make a decision here. How do we want to consider who we give that placement to? Which is premier, like the cover of a magazine. Well, that's one of the things that we do.
I was going to say, and I love that, because you're tackling this issue on two sides. One, I think telling authentic stories about executives from diverse backgrounds allows diversity and inclusion departments, HR departments, read these stories, understand where they come from, and do that homework, to your point, prior to the asking them questions, to meet them where they're at. So it fulfills kind of that, the soft side that we're talking about that's missing from the quotas, right? Also, you're helping the pipeline issue of allowing people from diverse backgrounds to see people that look like them and realize, like, wow, I can be in that position too, right? So you're attacking it from both sides.
Yeah, that's a big, you know, you hear that everywhere these days, and I believe it, this whole concept that it's, you know, you can't be who you can't see. I saw it last night. I was watching that Quincy Jones documentary on Netflix, and what's one of the first things he mentions? Growing up South Side of Chicago.
I mean, here's what's interesting, right? We were both in different ways. I was able to realize that I could be in business through Hispanic business. and right, and you were able to see yourself make a magazine that's better because of Hispanic business, which is interesting.
Yeah, man. And then I became a businessman through the process of making this damn thing.
For sure. And you know, we're believe it or not, we're almost at our time here, and I want to make sure that we talk a little bit about, because you and I have been having these conversations. This is just the first time we recorded it, which is great. And I think we came to the realization that something was missing out there from a diversity and inclusion perspective, right? Because, we have the data. We help companies understand where diverse consumers are coming from. You have the stories. You have the network. You're helping executive search. You're helping diversify. You're putting stories out there. But we came to this idea about, how do we merge the two together? How do we create a product that that allows people that are tasked with fulfilling positions, making companies and organizations more diverse and inclusive, but beyond just the numbers, beyond, okay, I hired one Latinx executive, I hired one Black executive, I hired, X amount of Asian executives. How do we give data to help them understand what do these diverse candidates look for in organizations, right? Like what are things that will make them feel inclusive, and how am I doing? So, talk a little bit about what we're doing kind of in partnership to solve this.
Yeah, no, I think at a high level, what we're doing is what's needed. I think what we're doing is we're merging art and science together. I think by doing so, we're going to be able to talk to more individuals, decision makers. There's people that like the data; they don't want to hear the story. And I think there's people that like the story; they don't want to see the data. And I think from a high level, what's interesting about the sort of this collaboration is that we're bringing those two sides of a solution together. Sorry, that might not be what you were looking for, but I think bringing it back down to earth. I think what I'm excited about, what we're up to is the fact that, we're embarking on a project to be able to provide organizations an actual solution that's coming from executives directly, aggregating that and providing the data for them to make the types of decisions that they need to make internally to make their organizations magnets for high caliber, high performing executives who are diverse, and bringing it together in a way that tells a story, so that it's informational, it's helpful, and ideally, it's helping internal teams guide their efforts. Because I think what's missing currently in the marketplace right now, I see we see a lot of reports that are helpful, but they're very much just giving us information that we know the problem. Well, we know the stats. So what else, right? And I think that's the challenge I see. I see a lot of organizations, and I think you do as well, that they're like, yeah, we know there's a problem. We now need help solving, right? And so what I'm excited about the project that we're working on is that we are coming together to say, okay, well, here it is.
Yeah, and we've been, the reason I was excited to work with you on this is that we're usually able to solve that issue from a consumer perspective, because it's like we've built panels of diverse respondents, but we never we always turn down, you know, okay, I need to talk to 500 executives. Well, to your point, there aren't that many. But the power of this product that we're launching is that you have access to the executives. We have access to the research. And so we're going to be able to talk to a number of diverse candidates, diverse executives that have really never, to my knowledge, been compiled before. So you're not only getting that authenticity, but you're also getting the scale that you can hang your hat on from a statistical perspective, which is exciting.
Yeah, man, I agree. And, you know, I agree. And it's exciting for a few fronts. If it is out there, like you said, I haven't seen it. But I'll tell you this much, it's not coming from two Latino founders.
There you go.
That's one. which is exciting, if I may say so.
Agreed. You know, myself, and I think that's a good note to end on. I didn't even think about that, but you know, it's two companies that have been doing this over 10 years, right? Looking, you know, your side from a storytelling perspective, highlighting stories, us from a diverse data perspective. So this is great. Thank you for listening. I hope this conversation was helpful for those of you in companies starting the diversity and inclusion journey. Bedro, as always, great talking to you. If people want to connect with you online, you want to drop your social media handles and best way to find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. Guerrero CEO is my Twitter handle. That's the best way. And that's, hey man, I think that's the best way because that's how I found you. So I think your audience can find me that way too.
Awesome. Yep. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for listening. And thanks again, Pedro.
All right. Thank you, man.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.